get the local view, covering a variety of topics in his role as a columnist for the Register Guard. See what he's up to in the sports section online, registerguard.com, on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how you doing?
Good, Steve. What movie was that? I got on just a little bit late.
Yeah, I was actually, as a writer and a journalist, it's the movie about the Pentagon Papers, The Post.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Is it good? I haven't seen it yet. It's on my list. I really want to see it. I'm a sucker for those movies. I love those movies. I love Spotlight. All the President's Men is one of my favorites, so I'm excited to see that one.
That's what I was thinking. All the President's Men. When that comes on, I can be heading into surgery, and somehow I'll just stop and watch the end of it. So, yeah, especially doing what you do, it's can't miss. All right, let's move along. So the NFL playoffs are now down to a Final Four, and it cracks me up because you get the preview magazines, all the coverage, and no surprise, you got Tom Brady in the Final Four, and naturally, he's there with Nick Foles, Blake Bortles, and Case Keenum. Beyond, is there any way you could see this coming? Are you a fan of the story nobody saw when you get down to, because, you know, you have predictions and coverage, and when you see something like this, is that like the reason we follow these games?
So you're saying you didn't have Blake Bortles in the AFC Championship game?
I think I had him in the divisional round, but not the championship game.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I guess I'm kind of two minds on this, because I do like the underdog story. I like the guy who comes out of nowhere. But I also find myself, a lot of times when it really gets down to it, I find myself rooting for the guys who've been there before. You know, if it ends up being a Blake Bortles Case Keenum Super Bowl, I don't know how excited I'll be about that. I think, you know, when it comes down to it, I'd rather see Tom Brady and Drew Brees in that game. But you know, along the way, it's kind of fun, especially when you get moments like that, like that Minnesota game. You know, that was one of the craziest things I think I've ever seen in sports, one of the craziest endings to a game I've ever seen. And the fact that it wasn't Tom Brady out there throwing the pass, I think adds to it a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And again, if I have to rack my brain, that never happens. Another move last week that, I'll tell you, no sources, no insider information. He worked at Boise State, Arizona State, Colorado, Vienna. He was the Oregon head coach. He got fired after 2016. What do you make of Mark Helfrich? Talk about out of nowhere, ending up as the Chicago Bear offensive coordinator.
Yeah, that was a little bit out of nowhere, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll ask our friend Aaron Centris about that.
Oh, yeah.
The Bears perspective, but for me, I was surprised, you know, just from the standpoint that, you know, there was no obvious connection there or anything. I mean, you know, the new Bears coach is Matt Nagy, who was the Chiefs offensive coordinator, who I had barely heard of until about 3 weeks ago. So it did kind of come out of left field. I guess I'm not totally surprised to see Mark Helfrich go to the NFL. I think there were probably some things about college football that he won't miss, including the recruiting side of it. I think it was probably attractive to him to just be able to focus a little bit more on football. He always struck me as just a football guy.
Yeah.
You know, and in the NFL, that's what you do. You know, there's not as much managing the players' personal lives. There's not the, you know, 365 days a year recruiting. It's just, you know, it's pretty focused on coaching football. So from that sense, I think it's probably a good fit for him.
We're talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. So when Willie Taggart became the first one-and-done in Oregon history, the name Kevin Sumlin surfaced, who did great work at Houston, had a big year at Texas A&M with Manziel. So now he's at Arizona, and we are in Eugene. So I guess to make a duck connection, which you kind of alluded to, any way around judging Oregon promoting Cristobal versus Sumlin's success at Arizona?
Yeah, I made that point on Twitter, and I heard from people who agreed and people who disagreed. But you know, my take on it is that I'm big on setting sort of baseline expectations when a coach is hired. And I think one of the ways you judge a coaching hire is by comparing the other coaches who were available at the time. So, for instance, I'm not necessarily going to judge Mario Cristobal by what Chip Kelly does at UCLA. I know a lot of Oregon fans would have liked to have Chip back, but when Oregon was hiring a coach, he wasn't available.
Right.
That was not an option. But Kevin Sumlin was an option, and by all accounts was somebody Oregon interviewed for the job. They passed on him. They elected to promote Mario Cristobal, and now Kevin Sumlin's going to end up in the Pac-12 coaching Arizona. So I just think it'll be interesting to compare the two programs under those two coaches and see what happens, because, you know, on the surface, Kevin Sumlin had the better resume, had a better record as a head coach, had coached longer at a higher level than Mario Cristobal. So just on the surface, I think Sumlin would have been a good choice for Oregon if they had decided to go that direction, but they didn't. Now they're going to be competing against him, and they had better hope that Oregon under Mario Cristobal has more success than Arizona under Kevin Sumlin. Otherwise, people are going to be asking some questions.
For those who were telling you that that'll never surface, especially around here, because what you never hear is the Blazers passed on Jordan for Bowie or Durant for Odin. Yeah, there's no way that'll come up.
People never bring that up. Well, and people never bring up the fact that Oregon could have hired Chris Peterson instead of promoting Mark Helfrich. That's
right.
Never been brought up, has it?
So with Chip Kelly at UCLA, Herm Edwards, Arizona State, we talked about the Ducks Wildcats. You got Jonathan Smith at Oregon State. And by the way, the last five games of the regular season, I mean, Oregon faces four of those teams. And like you say, you always like a good story. How much intrigue or how much fun is that last month and a week going to be around here?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be kind of like a reunion tour or something, just bringing together all the storylines of this Pac-12 offseason, which, it's been a really crazy offseason.
Yep.
When you look at this league and what it looked like a month ago, 6 weeks ago, what it looks like now, I mean, it's been a total transformation. I think there's been some programs like UCLA, You could put Washington and Stanford in there as programs who have really been winners in this offseason with guys they've had come back. There's been programs that have really taken a hit in the offseason. So I think the end result of that is going to be a Pac-12 that just looks a lot different than how it looks this year.
And we continue with Austin Mika, the Register guard. So what's in a name? Stanford changed to the Cardinal. Syracuse went from the Orangeman to the citrusy orange. We land at South Eugene and the Axemen, the Axe people, the story you wrote Friday. I'm curious because logos and names from, long ago generations, now you look at them and you're like, oh my God, what were they thinking? But what's the issue here and how did it even surface?
Well, my understanding of it is that there was a petition or a formal request made to South Eugene to consider changing the name from Axemen to something that is more gender neutral.
Okay.
My understanding of it is that there's a process now that's ongoing. There's going to be a chance for community input, and there's been a group of people who've been brought together, alums and people in the South Eugene community who are going to come together and talk about it. So it's an ongoing dialogue, and I've heard very strong opinions on both sides. I've heard people say this is basically political correctness run amok. I've heard other people say, hey, you know what? We've had this name for 90 years, but it no longer represents the entirety of the student body, so maybe it's time to tweak it a little bit. I tell you what, I made my suggestion. I threw out the Purple Axes, which is kind of a twist on the Purple Aces from Evansville University, if anybody's heard of them. So that was my suggestion. It tested well in focus groups. 5 out of 5 people who read that column approved of it. So we'll see if it gets any traction.
Well, it's funny because the first thing I think of Evansville, leave it to me to make it about the Yankees. That's where Mattingly's from, and he was a purple
okay.
Ace. So it made sense in my own little
there
sick way. But I'll tell you what, the circumstances. You know, you see protests going out on outside Dan Snyder's NFL team in D.C. And while you said some people are citing political correctness, is it a little different in that people are actually just willing to talk about it rather than scream opinions at each other about it?
Yeah, I do. I do have to applaud South Eugene for the way they've approached this, because I think they've done it in a really thoughtful way. And for the most part, I think, you know, the people who have expressed opinions on it have done the same thing. I mean, you know, there's been sort of the predictable backlash and sarcasm and stuff. But for the most part, I think people have all been pretty reasonable. And, you know, first of all, saying, okay, look, this is not life or death. This is not the most pressing issue in terms of social equality happening in our country. There's much bigger things going on right now than this. But that doesn't mean, you know, it's just it doesn't matter or we shouldn't talk about it. It's good to talk about it. And I think maybe at the end of the day, have the conversation, and maybe the answer is the name's fine. We don't need to change it. Or maybe the answer is we like the name. We're just going to tweak it a little bit so it fits the student body a little better. But I think for the most part, people have been pretty level-headed about that, and I think that's the way to have these discussions.
A couple final thoughts for Austin Meek of the Register Guard. The Duck women, now the Pac-12 leaders, swept the Arizona schools. Civil War this weekend, twice. We know the run they went on after finishing sixth in conference last year. So now as the front runner, how much more of a task do they face maintaining this level through an 18-game league schedule, you know, with more of a target on their back versus a two-week hot streak?
Yeah, it's kind of a cliche to say that when you're the team in first place, you get everybody's best shot, but I think it's kind of true as well. And I think the deeper you get in the season, the longer you've been in first place, the harder it is to stay there. So, you know, I think, you know, I give Oregon a lot of credit for what they've done so far, starting 6-0, winning at UCLA, which is a huge trump card to have in the conference race. But I just think it's going to keep getting tougher. You know, it has to. You know, you think eventually this has to get tougher, because they had two really hard-fought games in L.A., but the rest of their games, they've just been, you know, winning by blowouts. And they play Oregon State this week. They haven't beaten the Beavers since 2011. I think those two games are going to be really hard-fought. I'd be surprised if they're blowouts. And so I think that's just kind of the way it's going to be the rest of the way. And if Oregon can keep winning these games, you know, at some point, you know, it becomes a question of can anybody catch them?
And lastly, the Oregon men, who didn't have a good win, and now they've got a top 15 win. So, you know, they hung in against Arizona. They finished the game really cold. So do you take the, hey, would have taken a split on Thursday morning, or do you, you know, want to get greedy? But the bottom line is, how much better shape are they in heading into the Southern California schools this week?
Yeah, it seems like just when you want to write them off, they come back and give you a reason to think, you know, maybe that NCAA tournament streak isn't dead. Maybe they can put it together. They really needed to win one of those games, I thought. So beating Arizona State, I think that makes the road trip a success. Yeah, you'd love to have the win at Arizona. But they'll get Arizona at home. They'll have a chance to beat Arizona at home. And, you know, now it's kind of a matter of, I know it's a long ways away, but they got to get good wins. They got one against Arizona State, and we'll see, you know, what kind of win that is at the end of the season. I think Arizona State absolutely deserved to be ranked in the top five at the time that they were.
Right.
But I also don't think they're one of the five best teams in the country. Maybe not one of the 10 or 15 best teams in the country. So, you know, that win alone is not going to get Oregon where they need to be, but it's a start, you know. If they can get a few more like that, then we can start to have the conversation of whether they can get to the NCAA tournament.
All righty. Folks, catch his work in the Register Guard online, registerguard.com, on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Austin, always greatly appreciate your time and insight to kick off our Tuesday. You have a great week, and catch up soon.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Take it easy.